coming to you live from our secret underground lair.
This is Gotham Undercover,
a Golden Spiral Media podcast dedicated to the Fox television series Gotham.
This week we discuss a new chapter from the storybook of Gotham's villains and defenders of justice.
Now it's time to join your hosts, Tim Arthur and Ryan Boyles, for
Gotham Undercover.
Hey there, citizens of Gotham. I'm Tim.
And I'm Ryan.
And we are going to talk about this week's episode entitled The Balloon Man. This one was written by John Stevens, who also in the past has produced and wrote for the Gilmore Girls. I don't know how that kind of ties in. But it's also directed by Dermot Downs. Pretty solid episode that we'll talk about tonight. But we wanted to talk first about some of the leads and feedback that we've gotten over the past week. We've got a couple of items of feedback from last week's episode, Selena Kyle. Once again, Todd wrote in and basically was really happy to see Lily Taylor. And I like what Todd does here because he always kind of gives a numeric value to the episode, and he puts a really cool phrase on it. But he gives Selena Kyle 8.5 pits of death.
Pits of death. He's just making these up. There were no pits of death to speak of.
And he comments kind of a little bit about how they're really going into kind of the mannerisms of the Catwoman, scratching their eyes out, and the mannerisms and the pawing at the necklace. He's not a fan of Alfred at this point in time, and he thinks that Michael Caine probably would be absolutely appalled at this portrayal of the character. What do you think?
Well, that's hitting on what we talked about last week. Does anyone understand what the heck Alfred's saying? That's my.
Yeah, and he called out a little bit of a call out, saying that the writer stole the pictures all over the ceiling thing from the Blacklist. Would you agree with that? Mm-hmm. I know you watched the Blacklist.
I don't know about that. I mean, to me, that's a trope of lots of shows where people get obsessed. I mean, that happens on one of your favorite shows, Homeland. It happened in Alias. Almost every show where somebody's doing an investigation ends up doing that. I think the interesting take here is that it's not the good guy trying to, go out on their own and unravel something. It's the villain plotting his path, which usually that's kind of like something that we just see in passing, but clearly a Penguin has a lot on his mind and he keeps repeating it over and over again.
Yeah. And once again, he pointed out how he was happy to see Lily Taylor, as one of the Dollmaker's minions, but we don't get to see the Dollmaker. So will we get to meet him or her? And, he closes out his feedback always with kind of a little saying, and this one he says, "This is Todd in Illinois reminding you to keep your friends close and your locket closer."
Yeah, a little shout out to Selena. I mean, Selena was a major character last week. Yeah. And I take it back, Todd. There was a pit of death when the children were rounded up in the initial time they were rounded up. Yeah. Very cool. Thank you very much, Todd. The next viewer feedback we got was from, again, another friend of the show, it seems, Bianca Christine. She has a very short comment this week. Really, she's saying two major things. Really, Fish is starting to monologue, and she's not feeling it.
I get that too. It's almost like every time I'm still liking what Jada's doing with the character. I really am liking it, but it's almost like it really is almost like kind of like a Jay Leno monologue type thing that she's doing, where she's got to extol this, Hippocrates level, exclamation to the world whenever she's speaking.
Well, to me, I mean, it seemed like Fish really, she got like a lot of attention last week. And so to me, Fish really is an interesting character. I can see your point, Bianca. And she even rewatched it and said that, she thinks she's trying to channel Nichelle Nichols. So I get it. I think Fish, though, It's still interesting because she's over the top. I mean, my question is, again, is Fish going to freak out and become like a damaged, insane supervillain? So I think that's where they're going.
Yep. And Todd chimed in again with some feedback for actually for this episode for Balloon Man, and he seems to be thinking that the caliper is always, is still kind of 8.5-ish, and he gives this one 8.5 out of 10 sewage wallets. So
Nice.
he's referencing things from the show, and I like that. And he points out it's a liberation from Fringe as the balloon maker. Yes. Good to see. Always,
Funny.
Fringe appears everywhere in our universe. So,
It affects everything, like Lost.
yep. A couple of other things he points out. One of the new characters that we meet and met his demise in this particular episode, the police officer, Lieutenant Bill Cranston. Why didn't he shoot the balloon? We'll talk about that in the plot. That's a
I
good
thought that
question.
same thing. How is this cop not carrying like a shiv, a knife, an ankle pistol, something?
I think of a Spike Lee phrase from the late 1980s. Money, it's got to be the shoes, because he's pointing out that Oswald, the only thing the dude was lacking to get this dishwasher job was a set of comfortable shoes, and he just
You know
so
what?
happened to he happened to get them.
I'm agreeing. That's a universal truth.
And he's like, why didn't his new employer think it was funny that his dishwasher went missing that the same time someone came looking for a job? And didn't he notice that he was wearing the other guy's shoes? I don't
Yeah.
know. But some really good points, Todd. We appreciate you writing in. And his closing for this particular one is, this is Todd in Illinois, where our crime rate puts on sunglasses is skyrocketing. Hey, thanks for writing in,
Nice.
man. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, so we also got a voicemail from Jeff. So let's roll the reel.
Hey, this is Jeff Gentry, X-Force 11, calling in for Gotham Undercover. Hey, guys, I got a question for you. What do you think, what are y'all's theory on why the mob factions are trying to open or deal with Arkham? What interest did they have in a criminal asylum, a prison for criminals? What's the angle on them? Where can they make money off that? So just kind of curious to what y'all think and, what maybe storylines you could pull from that and maybe from the comics. So let us know. Thanks, guys. Bye.
All right, yeah, Jeff always calls into the show. We appreciate that. And really good question. Ryan, how do we tackle that?
First off, I gotta say to Jeff, you're one of our people.
That's right.
Saying using the big y'all, I'm all about a y'all. So thanks a lot. Thank you a lot for that. To me, I read it differently. Maybe I took it differently. I mean, Arkham was mentioned two or three times.
Yep.
To me, it seemed like the one that I remember that I thought had an impact was, again, another quote from Falcone in Gotham World. He said that Gotham was not, I thought he said Gotham was not good for business.
Arkham?
So I, yeah, I, something, you know, something along the lines of, the crazy factor isn't good. And we're going to talk about the vigilante stuff, whether that helps or hurts Gotham as well. So I'm not sure
Now,
why the
isn't
mob
it
would want
closed?
an insane
Arkham is
asylum.
closed at this point, correct?
Well, yeah, it's closed. It's been closed for 15
So
years.
here's my thought though. I'm thinking if they do reopen Arkham for some reason and start putting people back in Arkham, and we'll talk a little bit later in the plot kind of discussion here about the character from this week as one of the people that maybe could be someone that would reside there, if you call it residing anywhere, in the future. And I'm thinking that maybe the mob bosses could use the people in the criminally insane hospital to kind of do their bidding. Maybe it's in manufacturing drugs, or maybe it's in you know, doing kind of the minion work on the inside for any type of a product-based endeavor that the mob has. What do you think about something like that? Almost like, I mean, kind of like the you know, when inmates at normal prisons would, you know, make license plates and things like that. I mean, literally, I mean, these are people that are not going anywhere that can be used to bid your, you know, whatever, to bid your wishes, you know? What do you think?
I don't know. To me, I'm not following that line of reasoning.
Is there anything in the comic lore though, that would kind of tip a relationship between the mob and their types of, ventures that you can recall?
No, the thing that's most vivid in my memory right now is playing the Arkham series video games, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's obviously different from the comic book storylines, but mm-hmm. Arkham City is a huge thing where you've got, you know, Hugo Strange and you've got, you know, Ra's or Ra's al Ghul, however you say it,
mm-hmm.
In your universe. I mean, you've got the whole subplot of, you know, cleansing Gotham and enslaving Gotham and all that. So, but that's much bigger than the mob, right? So I don't know. To me, that's a viewer question. I don't really see a tie between Arkham and the mob.
Yeah. So what do you think, listeners? Why don't you also, you know, leave your feedback. You can call in, we'll give you the number in a little bit, or you can leave it on the webpage, goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. What do you think about the relationship between the mob in Arkham and why there's such an interest there? I don't think that we've been able to give a real authoritative answer at this point because we haven't seen that played out yet. And I'll definitely say that was something that I noticed in one of the new characters that we'll talk about this week in the conversations that he had with Oswald. He basically mentioned Arkham a couple of times and was concerned that Oswald, you know, didn't really know what he was talking about, and was happy to hear that he wasn't potentially eavesdropping as much as he could have. So once again, thanks for calling in, Jeff. We really appreciate it. And we hope to hear from the listeners in terms of your question as well.
All right. Our last feedback I sort of added in from a Twitter conversation I had with Alan Leposky, Alan Lipo on the Twitters. So he loves the Clock Tower angle with Jim and Barbara. He also made the same comment as you. I think he's really amazed by the fact that the young Selina Kyle in the series looks so much like Michelle Pfeiffer, and there's a lot of like comparison photos floating around the internet.
Well, you know what though, a lot of people have made that comment. It's not just me. I think in the Twitterverse last week especially, everybody seems to have kind of latched onto that. And once again, brilliant casting, I think, because people are picking up on that.
Yeah. And we were chatting about, you know, this is all based on, you know, the Edward Nygma character. I mean, Oswald, everybody we're going to talk about, brilliant casting so far.
Yep. Once again, everybody, thanks for your feedback. We appreciate the dialogue and we'd like to interact with you on this awesome show. Like to encourage you to leave us a review over on iTunes if you haven't already, because there's been some really helpful reviews that listeners have left for us, and those reviews help us in a couple of different ways. First of all, they help us gain some exposure on iTunes so more people can listen to the show, get exposed to the show, and offer feedback so that we all have something to talk about every single week. And also, it really helps us make the show better, because that's our goal. We're here talking with each other about this show, but really we're here talking to you. We want to know what you think and why you love the show, and really appreciate that interaction. So a review over on iTunes would be really helpful, and if you could take a minute to just give us a star rating as well, that would be very much appreciated. So thanks.
All right, let's talk about new characters now. We have some cool, you know, developments here, I think, but two new characters. One is a sort of villain, if you want to call it that.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to explain what we mean, but the Balloon Man, Davis Lamond, or Lamond.
Davis Lamond, yeah.
I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing any name right tonight. and we have Don Maroney, which is, any of the comic book readers would know, he's a big rival mob boss for Falcone. So it's me very interesting to see those developments. So let's talk about investigation now. So take us through what's your first sort of plot arc that you want to talk about, Tim?
Well, Oswald, he's made it back to the big city, and he's looking a little bit preppy. A little bit like a fish, out of water,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Pun intended, very much so. I got to say, there seems to be a central theme here with Oswald. You know, first of all, he bumps into this guy who recognizes him. And I think he says, doesn't he say his name is like Pierre or something like that initially to this one guy? He says his name is Pierre to this guy. And then later on, he tells Don Maroney that his name is Paolo.
Yeah.
from the old.
Well, no, Oswald's big trip to the city.
Yeah.
To me, the funniest thing when he steps off the bus or, you know, when he arrives, he steps out and he's got a yellow polo popped with a preppy sweater. So he obviously stole the clothing from the guy that he kidnapped last week, which I guess he just left in the trailer out in the BFE.
Yeah, so this guy that he bumps into is like, oh, you know, Fish is going to give me lots of money now that I found you. And not so much so. He just happens to have a blade and offs this guy. But you know what? After you kill somebody, you got to get yourself a sandwich. Once again, he goes, and this time it's a tuna sandwich that he asked for at a food cart. So there seems to be a central theme, I think, with Oswald's character. After committing an incredibly violent act, you got to have yourself a sandwich. What do you think?
Well, you know, man's got to eat.
Yeah.
I think at the end of the day, it's a very simplistic statement about, you know, the criminal mind, right? I mean, he's figured out that he can just kill people to get what he wants, which is kind of, you know, it's creepy, right? I mean, he's saying he's going to get ahead by just offing people that get in his way. So,
well, so one of the takeaways here, I think, and why this is such an important point in this particular episode is the fact that Oswald is kind of like the clock that keeps on ticking. You know, everybody thinks he's gone, and he's kind of sneaking. And I had this conversation with you a little bit before, you know, while Gordon and Bullock are fighting kind of the, you know, the flavor of the week criminal that's wreaking havoc around Gotham, you've got Oswald kind of slipping through the cracks behind the scenes, doing his bidding, and he's becoming much more of a formidable foe later on down the road.
He's gaining confidence, right?
Yeah.
And so he's becoming, eventually he'll become, you know, a boss. He'll become a big character. He'll become, in essence, a big supervillain. So he's a survivor, you know.
Right.
So he's the cockroach that you can't kill.
Yep.
Next up, well, we get Selina Kyle is back this week for a little bit, but a good scene. I really like this scene, the cat escapes, I'm calling it. She gets delivered by child services to Gordon's hands so that he can essentially twist her arm to reveal, you know, hopefully clues in the Wayne murder case. So they go out, of course, they go out to the scene, crime alley, and Selina, basically, I think her ulterior motive is just literally to get away. She's going to use Gordon. I don't think she has any intention of helping him. You know, she's a skeptic, even though she's really interested in Bruce for whatever reason. And so she is trying to prove to him that you know, which I think is a ploy, that Gordon should trust him, her. Gordon, though, he ends up getting duped and she escapes.
Yeah. I mean, and she lifts a pen from Bullock.
Yeah.
And uses it to kind of get out of the handcuffs that Gordon kind of handcuffs her to a railing there in the alley to keep her put while he goes down in the sewer, because she explained, you know, yes, I was here. I did see this because I tossed this dude's wallet in the sewer. And, you know, they go through this little cat and mouse thing, another pun, definitely intended. And, you know, where she explains, you know, wasn't somebody robbed? And he's like, well, why, yes. You know, somebody did report a crime with a, you know, somebody matching your description right around the time of the murder, but that doesn't put you here. And she goes on to explain that, you know, well, me tossing the wallet in the sewer does. And he goes into the wallet and or into the sewer and finds it and everything like that. So that was a great scene. I really enjoyed that. In terms of the significance of her character, though, do you think that after, you know, she kind of duped Gordon, do you think that that is changing the relationship between the two of them in terms of maybe him having a little bit more respect for her?
No, you're reaching.
because she was telling the truth about being at the scene, not necessarily duping him by getting out. Well, maybe to the fact that, you know, you can't, Gordon can no longer underestimate her because she's a very smart kid and she's also been honest about being at the scene.
Yeah. But I think he definitely underestimated her. He thinks she's just a punk kid.
You filthy criminals.
Yeah.
So I don't know about that. To me, I can't tell if she wants to help Gordon or not. I think she just wanted to escape from going upstate ultimately.
Well,
she's a different flavor of survivor, right? Gotham is a city of survivors who get by one way or another.
Yeah. All right. Well, moving on to one of the most talked about plot points in the Twitterverse.
About where?
On the Twitterverse during the show. Oh my goodness. Everybody was talking about this particular scene and plot point in the Watchtower love nest that we like to call it, Gordon's apartment with Barbara. Well, Barbara's visited by Montoya, and Montoya is really trying to convince Barbara that Jim Gordon is, you know, very crooked. And we know that's not the case because Fish has kind of told Montoya and Alan that Gordon was actually the one that killed Cobblepot because they went to kind of finger her for the murder.
Yeah.
You know, and we know that Montoya and Barbara had a relationship earlier when they were in college together. And apparently there's still something there in Montoya's eyes. And she happens upon Barbara in her apartment to kind of tell her, you know, by the way, Jim killed Oswald Cobblepot, that kind of stuff. And she finds Barbara smoking a little weed. You know, and I found that kind of interesting.
To me, they were, so Montoya is the relationship that Barbara wants to forget from college or something, right?
Yep.
And they were drug buddies together, I guess.
Yep.
Montoya probably has a drug problem, whereas Barbara is just unwinding, quote unquote.
Well, because Montoya made the comment that she's been clean for a couple of years or something like that. I forgot the time frame.
Yeah, we'll see.
But
the final thing is here. That, so to me, I did not know. Again, I was taken aback by this. Not because, I don't know. To me, it was like, wow, okay, they're going even further into that. I thought this was just a small little thing, but apparently, I mean, this is setting up so that Montoya obviously still has a thing for Barbara, but I mean, we all know she's not going to win her back by tearing Gordon down.
Right.
I mean, what right or wrong, right? Cause that's only going to drive a bigger wedge.
Well, you know? one of the things though that she said though, was she said that you always, or something to the effect of, you always know, can tell when I'm lying or telling the truth. You know, tell me, or look into my eyes and tell me that I'm not telling the truth. So I think at that moment, Barbara's definitely questioning that because she realizes if it's that, you know, if Montoya is that passionate about making her understand a particular point, there could be a little bit of truth to that. But at this point, we believe at least that she's still very, very much loyal to Jim and that Jim did not kill Cobblepot.
That's the big problem here. So Barbara in a way doesn't have a compass right now, mm-hmm. because she believes Montoya because she knows her so well.
Yeah.
And yet she keeps getting proven wrong when she questions Gordon. My big problem with this is, why does, if Barbara is so faithful,
right,
why does she keep questioning Gordon? Why does she even need, you know, why does she even entertain this? Because she's already, Montoya's been proven wrong twice now.
Right. And there was that kiss. There was a kiss that people were talking about. Yeah. So Montoya kind of planted one right on Barbara there, up there in the love nest.
So was Barbara pushing away or what?
Yeah. She told her to get lost. She said, get out of here. Be gone, girl.
I don't know. I don't know. This one is very, this whole, I don't want to call it a love triangle, but this thing is very, to me, it's very
interesting.
It's interesting, but because, I mean, it really drives a question of this truth, you know, truth in relationships, truth between people, because Montoya thinks she's right.
Yeah.
She is telling the truth. She just doesn't know the truth.
Right. And exactly. That's
throwing everybody off. So here's, I want to touch on Bruce. And again, this is not a show about Batman, but we got to touch on Bruce Wayne again. I mean, to me, this is really interesting. I don't know what you think about this, Tim, but it's each week Bruce is kind of, you can see the gears turning in this little kid's head. He's starting to get an idea of what he needs to do. He wants to do something.
Well,
so
the thing that tipped me
really
off,
he gets into this mode now of, you know, we see some foreshadowing, maybe Alfred does some sparring with him.
Yeah.
With canes, you know, like mm-hmm. sword play. And you see that Alfred's pushing him in a way and I think Alfred's trying to distract him from, you know, his obsession. But I think it actually pushes Bruce to realize, oh, maybe I do need to train to do something. Cause then you Bruce watches he's watching the newspapers and the TV news very closely.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really informing, I think, what, you know, he doesn't know what to do next, but he reveals there's the first foreshadowing also that he becomes a detective himself, right? Not for law enforcement, but the Dark Knight detective, because he has that whole, you know, dialogue with Alfred about, you know, I'm trying to find clues, and Alfred says, have you found any yet? And he said, well, no.
Well, a couple of things here. You're definitely right. Because the dialogue is there. Basically Alfred discovers that Bruce has the police files on his parents' murder, and he's got the pictures of his parents' dead bodies. And, Alfred makes the comment. I think it's, he says something to the effect of, so you're a detective now, are you? You know, so yeah. We're seeing, once again, we're seeing those gears turn, because Bruce is looking for these clues and really trying to dig into that, because he's not convinced that Gordon is going to find the killer, or if they found the killer, you know, in Mario, Mario Pepper. So another thing that I noticed too is that when they had the cane sparring and Alfred pushed him, Bruce definitely snapped. He has a temper because he came at him hard.
Oh yeah, that's,
you know,
true.
So he pushed. So we learned that Bruce kind of has a level where he gets pushed to a breaking point, and then he just goes beyond where he should be. Mm-hmm. So we're definitely starting to see lots of interesting character traits emerge from Bruce. I think that's really important. You know, once again, he's like you said, he's stuck on the news. The villain in this particular episode, the Balloon Man, we see him reading the paper, and you know, the headline is something to the effect of Balloon Man kills, you know, Gotham cop or something like that. You know, I think they're setting it up very well. What do you think?
Well, yeah, they're setting up the next, which I think is the major theme of this episode, which is the introduction of the notion of vigilante justice, right? Because the villain in this episode, Balloon Man, he ends up being a normal everyday schmo with a city job, right?
Yep.
That all of a sudden just snaps and decides he's going to take matters into his own hands, you know, to try to, you know, he's had enough with Gotham's corruption, right?
Well,
so he's actually the child services person that was in charge of bringing, you know, Selina to Gordon. And then he actually, you know, becomes, he all the while has snapped and is going to basically seek out corrupt people. And so I think, to me, that was a really cool scene where one of the last scenes with Bruce is he's watching the news, he's looking at the paper. I think the Balloon Man coverage really, in a way, it like inspires him to say, oh, I thought I saw him watching that or reading that and then saying, oh, maybe I should be a vigilante. I mean, I think Bruce is questioning everything at this point because he wants answers.
Let's talk about the term vigilante some more. I think typically most vigilantes have had a particular event that kind of pushed them over the edge that brought them to act in that way. And we learn about the Balloon Man, the character in this particular episode, Davis Lamond is the Balloon Man. He was, like you said, he worked for Child Protective Services, and he was really, really upset when the mayor decided to take all these kids and send them upstate to a juvenile hall.
Which is essentially, yeah, he said essentially it's just throwing them away yep. into a prison, it basically undoes, in his mind, it null and voids his life's work, which is trying to help kids.
Right. So once again, he was eliminating the corruption in Gotham because, first of all, let's kind of go over a little bit of the victims in this. We had the first particular character was the freed financier that was corrupt, stole money from Gotham citizens for years. This guy
Ponzi
was found.
Scheme, a guy with a big Ponzi scheme.
Yeah. So he was found not guilty. Ronald Danzer was his name. And, these people were handcuffed to weather balloons and taken away. And interestingly enough, I thought it was kind of cool that they did this, but the second victim, the lieutenant that we meet in this particular episode, Bill Cranston, who is very corrupt, likes to beat his suspects during interrogation with different statues and whatnot. We learn that he is the second victim, and his body actually drops after the balloon pops, drops on some lady walking a dog. So that was kind of cool.
I hate to say it, in a creepy way, the Balloon Man not only is the funniest name.
Yeah.
And it reminded me of my kids were watching some videos on YouTube about the dumbest or silliest villains in the DC universe, yeah. in the Marvel universe, and this guy has to be up there. You know, like if he was drawn in the comic book in the 70s, he would definitely be wearing like, you know, balloons all over his body, like Lady Gaga or something. I don't know, but yes, these deaths were almost comical in a way. I didn't want to laugh, but it was like, yes, they're being lifted up by weather balloons and then they crash back down.
Well, another victim too, and I liked the way that the Bullock described him. The third victim was, I believe, Cardinal Quinn. And Bullock called him the diddling priest. That's not funny because, molestation and things like that are not a funny topic, but I just thought it was funny that that's what Bullock called him.
So to me, it's not funny, haha, it's funny.
Disturbing way.
Because,
yeah.
And this, he doesn't get to his fifth victim. Or, you know, this is where Bullock and Gordon finally put together all the clues to figure out where he's, you know, hiding. He's in an abandoned child services location that's set for demo. And, they find, you know, lo and behold, there's a balloon, the last balloon that he's going to use to kill, you know, a fourth corrupt person. And I think that is, to me, that leads right into our fifth major plot point, which is this notion of vigilante justice. And first of all, we want to give a shout out to Dave Healy again. He submitted a excellent blog post, really dissecting. I'm not sure that I agree with all of it, but to me, this is exactly what I was thinking about after I watched the episode, which is what is the effect of essentially vigilante justice? Does it negate, you know, the dream of a better Gotham? With that really, that's Jim Gordon's mission in this series, is to save Gotham. But to me, that this Balloon Man, he, you know, the thing that really made Gordon think twice when he came home at the end of the day was he asked the guy, he said, who is going to be your fourth victim? And Balloon Man said, it doesn't matter. I could have picked anybody in this city and they're all corrupt.
Yep.
And that's kind of the whole point is, in a way, people think Gotham's already lost.
Yeah, and we don't want to give away too much of Dave's blog post over at Dark Knight Dave's Batman blog. The article is actually posted on our Facebook group. We encourage you to join our Facebook group. It's over at facebook.com/groups/GothamGSM. Just go ahead and apply to join the group, and we'll approve you right away so you can come in here and join in the discussion. But his blog really goes into a little bit more about how Jim's failed, you know, and he's finally realizing that he can't win. He's already given up. And that's kind of...
Well, he said, to me, I read it as Jim should give up, or why, you know, because we already know the end of the story. He's saying right. that the creation of Batman, this is an interesting question, right? If it's preordained, we know in this comic book storyline that Bruce becomes Batman.
Right.
He's saying that because Batman comes to be, that Gordon has failed.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what he does, Gotham descends even further to the point where a Batman is necessary. But I don't know that I agree with that, because it's not because I'm some sort of sparkling optimist. It's more of Jim does take control of the police force, you know, and takes it from the hands of the mob, right? I mean, even year one, it's about when Batman is introduced in year one.
Mm-hmm.
Jim, you know, his goal is to clean up the police force, because that's the first step: restore law and order, and not have it be corrupt. You know, so it's not the balance that the mob wants, where they get their way. It's more of a checks and balances, and I think maybe the combination of Jim with Batman eventually, to me, the balance is only undone by the supervillains. So I don't know.
Yeah, but check it out though.
This is the most thought-provoking thing about the series so far. And it's really cool that they're going to this level of, like, you know, plot development.
Yeah, well, definitely check out the post. We'll put the link in the show notes, and it's also posted over on the Facebook group as well. So definitely encourage you to go over there. It's kind of like an op-ed piece, and I think he did a really good job. So once again, thanks, David, for bringing that to our attention, and thanks for writing some very inquisitive things and provoking our thoughts. We're going to move on to our leads and clues this week. We've got a couple of things that we wanted to point out and ask and kind of talk about a little bit before we wrap up the episode.
Yeah. So the first thing that I thought, and you told me that this was not new news, but it was new news to me during the credits for this episode. They're doing the teaser for the next episode, of course, but when they do the cityscape sort of fade in with the title reel of Gotham, where the big letters kind of go over the city, as it's zooming out, you see a green question mark on top of a building.
Yeah. And, once again, I did not notice that, because kind of when the title fades out, I'm done with it at that point. But
you gotta
actually
stick around to the end for Easter
actually
eggs.
On the artwork that we use for our show artwork for the actual MP3 that's downloaded for the podcast, the original poster backdrop for the show has a hotel with a green question mark on it.
Yeah. So this reminded me of two really cool things. I just got done playing Arkham City. I know I'm way behind on my video games, but I played Arkham City all the way to the end. I beat every submission. The only thing I haven't beat yet is all of the Riddler missions.
I have it, and I've only finished about half of it, man. I need to finish it.
Well, so it looks like a Riddler trophy. And we know Edward Nygma now. He's kind of a good guy right now. So to me, that was just a geek out moment.
Yep. But we know, obviously, the Riddler's going to, or Edward Nygma is going to become the Riddler. I don't know if we're going to see that character kind of emerge into that villain within this particular season, but definitely coming down the line. And they've already kind of dropped that hint in the artwork for the program. Once again, we had another question, and this one was something that I'm interested in learning more about, was, does Barbara still have feelings for Montoya? We know that it's very much the feelings Montoya has for Barbara, but is she reciprocating emotionally You know, does she have anything still invested emotionally with Montoya? And why does she keep doubting Gordon? I really want to know if I partially want to know because they've gone, as you said, Ryan, they've kind of gone a little bit more into the relationship between these two than we thought that the writers would at this point. So it's obviously something that they're building upon. So where is that going to go?
There's going to be a showdown. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. Showdown in the Watchtower.
Yeah. Well, ultimately, I mean, my last comment on this one is, you know, yes, I do wonder why she's doubting Gordon. I know we have to have dramatic tension and everything, yeah. But I wonder if it's because Barbara thinks that she's not good enough for Gordon. You know, so she's trying to find a problem with the relationship. I don't know. We could psychoanalyze everything.
So we end up this episode with an awesome scene, I think. The last scene in this particular episode is there's a knock at the Love Nest. Gordon and Barbara are having an impassioned conversation. She offers to get Gordon a drink because he's had a rough day, and they're talking about all these really heavy things in Gotham. And there's a knock at the door. And then Barbara goes and answers it, and we see our old friend.
Quack, quack, quack. Yeah. It's Oswald Cobblepot.
And he shows up and he says, "Hello, James, old friend."
Dude, so, that it totally threw me. I don't know about you, man. I did not see that coming.
I
thought Oswald was literally going to hide. You know, he's making new friends with Maroni on the other side of the mob now. I don't know what's happening here. I knew it was
him, though, because who else is going to show up at his apartment? I mean, I just did not, you know, see anybody else coming there. But, yeah, great cliffhanger for next week. I can't wait to see what happens coming up next week.
Very much.
So next Monday is going to be an awesome show. Can't wait. And we know you feel the same. So on a 10-point scale, I would give this particular episode, I'd say, an 8. Not quite a 9. I think the quality is still definitely there. I really enjoyed the show. I enjoyed the last episode a little bit more, I think. I would have probably, if I had mentioned it on last week's show, I'd probably give it like an 8.5 or a 9. This is about an 8. Still high quality, but not quite the best I've seen so far. What do you think, Ryan?
I'm giving this one a solid 9 Danishes out of 10 because... I'm remembering another Twitter conversation I had with one of my buddies from work, Noah, down in Austin. We were talking about Bullock, and we didn't really talk about Bullock as a major character this week, but he's just the depth of these characters right now for me is really solid, and so the layers they're introducing and the characters just for me. It's really clicking for me, so I'm giving it 9 Danishes.
All right, well, and you say Danishes, and I once again I got a my hat here. It seems like a lot of the comic relief in this particular series is related to food, with either Oswald or with Bullock. In this particular episode, we see him kind of absconding a burrito from a street vendor, which we know he didn't pay for, but he's got a burrito, he also talks about how he deserves a Danish. So lots of food humor. We wanted to let you folks know that if you're looking for another great podcast that ventures further into the DC universe, we'd encourage you to check out Central City Underground. It's a podcast all about the new Flash series over on the CW. You can find it over at www.goldenspiralmedia.com/podcasts.
All right, Gothamites, we are going to wrap it up. Once again, this week, our investigation is closed, but before we head back out onto the streets of Gotham, we're asking you to share any leads to solving the weekly investigation. You can leave a message at 304-837-2278, or you can go over and visit the website, goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. Is Oswald couch hopping in Gordon's Watchtower Love Nest? For the answer to this question and more, tune in next week.
Same Gotham time, same Gotham channel.